I got arrested in Chicago with like a ton of drugs, you know? So that was like big, like ESPN picked up the story. Like the NFL didn't really like me at that point. And people have no clue how much like leverage the NFL has in the media. Like the sports media, like they're dying to help the NFL because they don't get those contracts. They're not going to make any money. So there's a lot of times where the NFL can easily say like, hey, pick this story up. It was national news like before I even got out of jail.
Welcome back to the Locked In with Ian Bick podcast. On today's episode, I have John Moffitt, a former NFL player, to share his story, including his run-ins with the law. I had an interesting and amazing conversation with John, and I'm so excited to share it with you today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to lock in with John Moffitt. Well, John Moffitt, welcome to Locked In. Absolute pleasure to have you here today. Thanks to Patrick and Nino for connecting us. And having you on the show today.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I haven't done a podcast in like, I feel like a long time, you know? So it's cool to be back on one.
Yeah. And this is a little bit different, you know, a little different setting. And it's in Connecticut. Who would have thought? You're right. From Connecticut. Did you grow up in Connecticut?
I did. I grew up in Guilford.
Guilford.
Yeah. Okay. Shoreline town. That's like right outside New Haven.
Who was your guys' like rivalry back in the day?
Madison. The next town over.
That's where Patrick lives, right? Madison?
He lives in Madison.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. What was childhood like growing up?
Good. Generic. Like, you know, that's like a psychology question. Like, let's go over your childhood. Draw some pictures. Like,
I got to start off strong.
Damn. Do you lead in with that a lot for people?
Always. Yeah.
Because it makes a connection to, you know, maybe what happened later with them or something like that.
Yeah. We always like to get. So my whole thing is, because I was in prison and I got arrested and that's how like this whole thing formed.
Yeah.
And I bring people on the show that have like gone through really, really shitty situations. Yeah. And when you look at the person beyond what their situation was and you get to know that they grew up similar to you and they grew up, have like a normal childhood, like the Chevy episode, people got to know what his childhood was like and who he was before he went on to become a worldwide, you know, phenomenon. People get to understand that they're just a normal person too.
Yeah.
And it kind of like humanizes people in that respect. So I always like to start there and then work our way through. So people fall in love with the character before anything bad or failure or anything occurs in your life.
That's pretty cool. That's interesting. Normal childhood, honestly, like a blue collar family. My dad was in contracting, you know, pretty nice town. Like now it's become like, a little more affluent, you know, just because people are realizing like how beautiful it is. There's also like an influx of people from New York. But when I grew up, it was kind of more like a farm town kind of deal, you know, that was on the shoreline. So, I would say I had a pretty average, other than being like physically larger than everybody else for my whole life. And then also, I think sports, being an athlete, definitely affected. It wasn't like normal. You know what I mean? Especially as I became like really good, you know? So I think that kind of always changes things. You kind of become more like a little bit of an outsider in that regard, you know, but great parents, you know, parents together. I have a younger sister. I would say pretty normal childhood, pretty blue collar, like American kind of childhood.
And to put it in perspective, you're 6'4".
Yeah.
You're a big guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just had to raise the camera all the way up.
Yeah. Yeah. And always like big in school too, even when you're young, you know? So like I had the desk, like, all the kids, the desks were in groups and the kids' desks were all the same. And then mine was like 4 inches taller than their desk. Cause like, I wouldn't fit under the normal one, like stuff like that. That I feel like you always feel like you're a little bit different. You know what I mean? Not exactly like one of the group, but I feel like maybe everybody feels like that. Not sure, but yeah.
How'd that make you feel looking different and being in that setting?
I think you just get used to it. You know what I mean? And then you start to kind of develop like your personality around that. You know what I mean? You get comfortable with it. And then you realize, okay, I'm not exactly the same. I think it did lend to, you know, I think I do see the world a little different than people. And I'm also not afraid to have like a little more of a controversial opinion because you're kind of used to being like a little bit different, a little bit on the outside. Sports success definitely makes you feel, it's weird because it's a duality because you have a team, but at the same time, when you come home, you're definitely the only one doing what you're doing, you know? So I kind of felt like, maybe that as well, you know?
Was anyone like embracing your difference body-wise and saying, hey, like you're going to be a great athlete, like own it, this and that? Because I feel like when I was in school and I was different in my own, you know, quirky ways, that wasn't necessarily embraced. It was kind of like frowned upon.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I feel like amongst your peers, you can get teased a little bit. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh, you know, you're tall or you're a fat kid or you're a freak or whatever. But I feel like, yeah, older people definitely embrace you're tall. You're going to be a basketball player. You're going to do this. So you're right. There is like a positive spin to that. You know what I mean? Which maybe also allows you to be like a little more confident in it, you know?
Yeah, I think we need more people like that in the world that are kind of embracing the people that are different.
Yeah.
So many kids get bullied and stuff for being different.
Yeah, bullying's an interesting thing though, because it's like you don't want it to be too bad, but you also don't want none of it. Cause it does like make us like, even my hard times, like even when I was bullied, I'm still kind of thankful for it. Cause I feel like those things do make you tough. I don't like to see like crazy bullying when they're like doing stuff that's like destroying a person's life. You know what I mean? But like a little bit of teasing and stuff. I think that's natural. You know, I think, what was how did you feel different?
So I was always a kid called like Twinkie or Chubbs. I was fat and like chubby. Like I was, if you look at the pictures of me on Google, I had like triple chin and everything like that. But I was the kid that was just like super creative. Like I did musical theater in a world where everyone does sports.
Yeah.
So I was the only friend in my group that did musical theater, and they would have me dress up as Milton Berle dressing as a woman. And I would
in school.
Oh, it was in a musical theater camp that was in the actual high school. But I did theater all 4 years at Danbury High School.
Yeah.
And I would put the high heels on, the lipstick, the wig. And
really?
I loved doing that because I was a center of attention.
How old were you?
I was 10 or 11.
Are you serious?
And then I went on to be like this party promoter in high school. I'd walk in. I thought it was cool to wear a suit and tie to public school.
That is
my
cool,
dad's man. Different like fish colored ties because he's a caterer. He had these funky ties.
Yeah.
I had a briefcase. I had a phone. I would answer my phone mid class. Just, you know, I wanted to be different at all costs. Like, I love being different now.
Yeah.
What I do is different.
Absolutely.
So I think at a young age, I always embraced that. But more so than ever back then, people were so against that.
Yeah.
Like, I was always just the outsider, but I was okay with that.
Right.
But all my friends needed to fit into the norm.
Yeah.
And I just saw how, like, they were looked at and how parents looked at me and stuff.
Right, right. Were there girls in the theater camp, though, that could have played the female parts? Or was this like, really?
But because it was, have you heard of Milton Berle?
No.
So he was known for, he went on like, he had late shows or something back in the days, I think in the 30s or 40s, something like that. He was known for dressing as a woman on stage. And then they had me play Ed Sullivan, a couple other famous people, but that was his thing.
Camp was called Milton Berle Theater Camp.
No, that was just so every year it was called Summer on Stage.
Yeah.
And we would reenact every summer would be a different year, like a different theme. So this was like that era. And they had me do a sketch or a skit going on stage as Milton Berle. And they were like, would you be okay doing this? I'm like, yeah, because I was the highlight of the show.
Wow.
Because I was the only one dressed as a woman.
That's crazy to think about nowadays, though.
Yeah, I would be totally
not like
different.
Now, but like the sensitivities nowadays, like, because the first thing that comes to mind for me is like drag queen story time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And could you imagine like if people, that's like an interesting.
Oh, and if you had your kid do that in school and stuff. It
right,
been,
right.
It was a different time period. What social media wasn't, there was no, Facebook was just beginning.
Right.
This was like 06, 07.
Yeah.
Facebook was just beginning and there was nothing else really. You know, Instagram started a couple of years later.
Right.
It was a totally different world.
Wow. Yeah.
But I loved it and I owned it.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you bullied for? Just your looks?
Oh yeah, just being bigger.
Okay.
The biggest thing, I mean, teased. I wouldn't call it bullied. I'd just say teased. And then when I was in high school, definitely had problems. Like when I was a freshman, like almost got into a couple fights with like seniors and stuff like that. Just because you're bigger, so they look at you like, you know. And also I was, you know, I wasn't gonna do what they fucking said. So like there was kind of that thing. And then that pretty much ended though, like right around like sophomore year, junior year, because you're bigger than everybody. You know what I mean? So it kind of a little bit when you're young. But again, I feel like with me, you know, I'm kind of thankful for stuff like that. And I also think even if it puts a chip on your shoulder, that's a good thing too. You know what I mean? Like it's, you kind of like, and it sounds like you did it too. Like you're kind of thankful for those things, you know, it makes you who you are, you know? And I think that's a cool thing to get to that point. Like I've been in points in my life where I was like, not only do I not like who I am, I don't like my past either. You know what I mean? So it's cool to be in a place where you can say like, man, I like who I am and that's because of my past, you know? So,
I mean, I just look at the growth, you know, and everyone grows.
Totally.
You can't judge, like people judge people from who they were 10 years ago, five years ago. You're not that same person anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, definitely evil people for sure. There's evil people out there, but for the most part, you feel like people really are like they're trying, you know what I mean? And all of our trying is like different levels. You know what I mean? Like where you're at, if you're trying where you're at, then, you know, that's great.
Yeah. So, and that's why it's so important for people to see where you came from.
Yeah.
And what childhood was like, because you could, not saying you personally, but you, someone sitting in that chair, could turn out to be the villain. But at one point they weren't the villain. So why did they become the villain?
Right.
At what point in their story do they change?
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating, like finding out like how the person changed and why. And a lot of the times it has to do with their childhood or something that happened back then.
I always like to say it because for my employees, because I find now people are a little bit soft, you know what I mean? And a little bit like, you know, a lot about our feelings and stuff like that. And not enough about like, hey man, I got a job to do, or I'm here to do this, or I need to do that. Like respecting something a little greater than yourself. I think it's an interesting balance, but I love to say to my employees, I'm always like, hey man, don't be afraid to be the villain in someone else's story, you know? And to an extent, like we're all villains in someone else's story, or we're all heroes in our own, you know? But I think that's true. You definitely, when you humanize a villain, like you can definitely turn them into a hero, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's obviously, and we're, you know what? Dude, I'm fascinated by the coldest people too, though. Like the people are so fascinated by like the Jeffrey Dahmers and the Gacys and all these people of the world, probably because they were so, they don't even have that. You know what I mean? Like sociopaths and psychopaths do fascinate people. Do you ever think that you've had a sociopath or psychopath on the show?
Not really, because ours is always like a motivational, inspirational like type arc to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people, I think the fraud guys that are maybe the less sorry.
Yeah.
They are less forgiving, I guess you would call it.
Yeah.
The fraud guys to what they did. I'm not saying all of them, but most of them. But then the people that went to the guy, I've had guys sit in the chair that have been to prison for murder, and they are completely changed, like extremely sorry. And like their life's changed, you know, because of it. So you always see, and then I'll talk to some people, they're like ducking restitution or this and that, you know? So it's so, it's just crazy in that sense. And that's where I guess you get into like the realm of psychology and narcissism and all of that kind of stuff too.
So in terms of rehabilitation, like, do you think prison actually rehabilitates people, or do you think that it's like kind of just...
Absolutely not. I mean, the prison itself, I think it's your mental state combined with the prison.
Yeah.
Like how you're able to adapt. Like to me, prison was the best thing that could ever happen to me, but I didn't know that while I was in prison, and I didn't know that in the 3 years after prison.
Did you go to prison or jail?
Prison.
Prison.
Federal prison.
You spent some time there?
Yeah, 3 years. I was in Danbury for a little bit too. Yeah.
Really?
It was kind of all over the place. Did you ever hear Tuxedo Junction back in the day?
Tuxedo Junction. That sounds really
familiar. Yeah, it was a big club in Danbury. It was kind of like a Toad's Place in New Haven.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
They had big rock shows and whatever. And I ended up taking it over when I was 18. And I did this show, these shows with like Steve Aoki, the Chainsmokers, Adventure Club, like big names.
Yeah, yeah.
But I lost a shitload of money before that doing concerts. And that's how like this whole accidental Ponzi scheme came to that.
Oh, wow.
So it was just like HBO did a documentary about it. It's off HBO now because they merged with Discover, but we're working towards a book and, you know, hopefully something will come out of that. But I don't even really focus on my story now. I built my platform off of other people's stories.
Right. Absolutely.
We had one go viral the other day, 13 million views of a prison guard talking about the smell in Rikers Island. It's literally crazy.
Right.
But it was just, it's incredible how life takes you full circle.
Yeah.
That's what I'm fascinated by. But I didn't learn that from prison. Like prison didn't prepare me for what I do now.
Right. Right.
And they kind of just throw you the wolves, and the system's designed to set you up for failure.
Right.
Probation, excessive amounts of probation. They treat you literally worse after you've done your time than even, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Which is insane. Just the strictness and the living conditions and halfway houses and the system screwed up.
Yeah.
And it takes conversations like this to change that.
Absolutely. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you think of our system and then you think of like how it is in Sweden and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like there was a guy, I don't know if you ever heard of him. His name's like Anders Breivik. Have you ever heard of him?
Mm-mm.
He killed like 70 people on like a mass like shooting and everything like that. And he's in like a Swedish prison. They didn't even give him like they didn't even execute him or anything. You know what I mean? They didn't nothing. He's just in jail for life. But their prisons look like dorm rooms. You know what I mean? Like they're way more, and they're really trying to like move you out of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like move it along. But no, that's really interesting. I agree. So is your goal prison reform to an extent or no?
I mean, I don't. So I think there's this whole world of prison content creation. And I think you have like half of it, which is into like prison reform.
Yeah.
Then you have another half that's like into reentry. And what I do is I put a different spin on it. mine's about entertainment and motivation mixed together.
Yeah.
And in return, you get those stories out to way more people than the people that are pushing reform. And this has the effect, because reform's a little bit boring if you're saying we need to reform our prisons.
Right.
If I'm telling a story and sharing a story of how a guy got stabbed in prison, that goes viral. That raises awareness of why what we need to change in the prison system. How could we let that happen? If I'm telling a story about how I got extorted in prison or this or that, I think that raises more awareness.
Yeah.
And in return, that promotes reentry because of what I've been able to build off of my experience and the reform aspect.
No, that makes sense.
Now, are people willing to listen at the government level? Who knows? But, you know, you'd be surprised. A lot of politicians, like, they're kind of weary about going down this path into dealing with prison influencers. Some states are great. Like, I've been invited into Arkansas, the county jails, and I'm going to Nashville next month and speaking to county jails and stuff. And some are really great about it and want to fix things. Others, I'll reach out to people and they don't give you the time of day.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because in my experience, so I never went to prison. I went to jail a bunch of times. You know what I mean? Like, got arrested, different things. It's so pay to play, you know? Like, and I know if I got a good lawyer, especially when I was playing, get the best lawyer I can find, it's almost like it's done before it's even started.
Yeah.
Like, I've literally walked into court and I've had a judge almost like stop things and start telling me like how good of a job I did picking my lawyer. You know what I mean? Because they were like friends and like, and he's like, you got a really great lawyer here. I can tell you're going to go to rehab. You want to change. Like, we're going to, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to fix this up, you know? And that was like felonies. You know what I mean? Like, that's when I got arrested in Chicago, and I had like cocaine, ecstasy, marijuana, pills. Like, they thought I was dealing, which I wasn't. It was just for use, but I'm a big guy. You know what I mean? Like, so it was for personal use. And anytime I really got in trouble, I always shelled out the cash and the problems were solved. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it's not really justice.
And
you know?
I think that's more on the state level, because in the feds, like, you can have all the money in the world. If they want you, they got you. You look at like the senators that are getting arrested now and guys with power.
Yeah.
They don't play in that level.
Yeah.
It might help you money in the short term, like staying out on bond and and pushing things back and continuances.
Right.
But on the state, it's so affected by money. Because I saw when I hired a local attorney for local misdemeanor cases related to club, he was able to make side door phone calls, a quick text, hey, we got this thing moved. The average person couldn't do that.
Yeah, they all make, I mean, and that's the funny thing, man. Like, they're all in the bar association, right? So that's where you start to be like, is this even real? Like, the judge is in the bar association, right? Yeah. Like, the judge is accredited by the bar, and then the lawyer is accredited by the bar. And then the only person there that's not is you. And so you kind of start to think of it, you're like, oh, this is kind of already fixed. Have you ever heard of like the maritime law, how they do all that stuff? You ever go down that rabbit hole?
No, I've heard of that, but I never really dove into it.
That's like a crazy thing where they basically say like all this stuff is commercial maritime law. Mm-hmm. And they kind of like build it out like it's a ship. And you're going, when you cross that boundary, you know, when you go through the door, like, now you're going onto water. So it's like the rules of the high seas. It's like pirate stuff. Mm-hmm. And then everything that they have you for is, most things are infractions in uniform commercial code. You know what I mean? Like, most things. If it's a real crime, then yeah. But so then they kind of get you on like a lot of like admiralty law and stuff like that. That's all just commercial infractions. You know, your speeding ticket is a commercial infraction, but they're treating you like a corporation. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They're treating you like you're a corporate entity. And it's like all this deep level stuff. And that's how they kind of get away. Because really, common law is the law of the land. You know what I mean? So common law is really basic. Like, I hurt you, right? So I damaged you. So now you deserve restitution. Like, that's really the whole of common law. But they do like all their little infractions and they claim that it's the law, but that's really just uniform commercial code. And they'll tell you it's all in UCC, which I find like that's like a whole other level.
How do you stumble across this thing? Would you watch a documentary? No, or something?
Dude, I didn't want to be a part of the I didn't want to pay taxes. So I didn't want to be a part of the United States like government or anything. Dude. And I also didn't feel like I needed a license for anything, right? Like, I don't need permission to like drive. I don't need permission to have a gun. I don't need permission to do any of this stuff. That's all illegal, you know, like it's the reverse. So I just went down this rabbit hole. And back in the day, YouTube used to be like really like free. Like, you would search stuff on YouTube and you could get like stuff about anything. You know what I mean? And I kind of just went down like this. It was right after I had like a lot of personal issues. and I wasn't like doing a ton in my life. And I was just like watching all these YouTube videos, and I found like some interesting stuff on this, but I actually used it to like fight a traffic ticket once just to see if it worked, you know?
Yeah.
So I wrote a bond, you know, and I used an exemption because they basically say like, you know, we're all in the company's bankrupt, or excuse me, the country's bankrupt. Right. And what's formed is the United States Corporation. And that's why it's all in like the United States. It's all in like capital letters because it's a corporation, you know? And what they gave for collateral, because we went bankrupt to whatever accredited associate, whatever bankers or whatever it is, they gave like us and our labor and everything as collateral, you know? So they claim that you can use your Social Security to pay debts because there's no legal money. Like in like a dollar or whatever is like a federal, you're probably like, holy shit, are we going down this rabbit hole?
No, it's fascinating.
A dollar is like a Federal Reserve note. It's not real money and it's not backed by anything, right? It's fiat currency. So technically it's just a debt note. So because there's no real legal tender to pay anything, you can actually write bonds and pay stuff with your Social Security. And what you're doing is you're actually giving the system like more credit or debt to work with because they're working in debt because they're inversed. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like an inversion. But I told a guy that I did that. So I wrote a bond. I used my whole name and I signed it and I sent it into them. And I let the Secretary of State know. And then I sent it into the accredited, like, you know, when they collect tickets, it's like an infractions company. It's like a credit collector. I sent it into them. I'm like, oh, I'm going to use my exemption, blah, blah, blah. And like, I went into court when I had my court day and I came in and they were like, as soon as I came in, and this was for weed, like I was driving around with like a ton of weed and I got a ticket for it. And I came in and they were like, oh no, you don't owe us anything. You don't owe us any money and you can go now. And that's it. And they're like, maybe you should go like get a license for pot or whatever. And they just like let me out. I talked to one of the guys that like does all this stuff. And he was like, yeah, dude, all they did was they took your signature now and they loaned it out 10 times, just like you would do fractional lending. And they probably made 10 times whatever that like money you owed them was. They probably made 10 times that by using your signature as a bond. Cause it's like, it puts life into it, wow. You know? Yeah. Yeah. So that shit was crazy. And I didn't know what to believe, but I remember like walking in and dude, like it was like all the black guys were like lined up and like, what the fuck, man? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how do you get out and shit? And I was like, even I was like, I don't know, man. I think maybe they did use this because they never bothered me again about it. And I owed them money and everything supposedly. And they just like, let me go.
You're going to have some people trying this out now.
It's crazy, dude. It's like a whole other thing about like the way justice is done and how they can get away with things, you know, because everything's about your honor when you go in there. You know what I mean? Like honor is like a really big thing when you go to court. Mm-hmm. That's why they call the judge like your honor, you know, and it's why they cross-examine you. You know what I mean? Because they're trying to see if your conscious mind conflicts with your subconscious mind. And if there's a confliction or there's a schism, then you're a liar. You know what I mean? And if there's not and it's effervescent, then you have your honor. That's kind of like how they do it. It's wacky. Legalese, like, have you ever heard of legalese? Mm-mm. Legalese is like what they, like the way they talk in court. And they actually look at you like, because you need representation when you go to court, you're like not a real person because you can't even speak in the court. Like you don't have a voice in the court and you don't. Only your lawyer does. So like you actually have a lot of power if you represent yourself in court. Because you have a firsthand account of the situation as opposed to the lawyers that don't. So if you're playing against a lawyer and he has a secondhand or no account of the situation and you actually experience it and you're testifying with the truth, it's really hard to go against, especially if you use like affidavits. There's guys that like try to use affidavits and shit like that to like move things forward. It's fascinating. It's a whole other realm of stuff, but it's just another like level to me, the justice system that's just like insane.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're telling the truth and you're testifying, it works. But the reason why lawyers choose not to put their client on the stand is because most of the time the client's not telling the truth. In some right. of these situations, that's right. when it backfires.
Well, and also though, like again, like think back in like common law days. Like in common law days, you would stand before a king or a judge and you would tell your side and then the other party would tell their side. You know what I mean? It comes straight from you. So by using a legal, like by using a representative now, you kind of have that in between. So first party, you know, that person, that's why they have to follow, like it's called rules of professional conduct. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
That's what a lawyer follows, right? They have to follow those because they're representing somebody else. So I don't know. I got lost in that rabbit hole, and maybe it was from my experiences or whatever, but I just found it so fascinating. A lot of people don't really look into it. You know?
My biggest fear now is that I see what goes on in Russia with their court system.
Oh, yeah,
and like, I would never, to be in that position, imagine just going there and like someone plants a weed or whatever on you and you get caught in their court system.
Yeah.
They get sentenced you to 20 years.
Oh yeah.
And everyone's guilty.
Yeah.
And the appeal, like I get a kick out of the articles that say, oh, we're going to fight this. We're going to appeal this. They're not going to win. If you can't even win an appeal in the American court, how are you going to win an appeal at Russian court?
And who's that basketball player? Brittany Griner.
Yeah.
Cause what, she have weed, like a weed pen or something?
Something like that. I mean, she was high notoriety. So, you know, that helped, but there's people that go over there. I'm reading that do get jammed up over there over stuff where they're marked by the government as, you know, it's unconstitutionally held over there.
No, foreign law, like foreign jail. You ever have anybody on foreign jail?
No, we want to. Most of the people that do have foreign jail are banned from the United States.
So, really?
Because either they got extradited or something like that.
Right.
And they want to do it over Zoom, but I don't do Zoom interviews just to keep the integrity of it. And there's nothing better than, in a world full of Zoom meetings, being with the person one-on-one.
Totally.
Sitting in a room, talking, not having any static or feedback. It's just you and the person. We're just in a regular room with two chairs and you know, there's no like film crew or anything. It's just us having a conversation. I think that's great.
No, I agree. It's more authentic.
So when you were in high school, did you know you were going to be a football player?
Yeah. I was pretty good. And the size, you know, like 6'4", I was like 275 pounds. Like I was pretty good at football. I was getting recruited. By my junior year, I had like scholarship offers. By my senior, I had like 30 or 40
offers.
Yeah, that's pretty normal though for like when you're on the level. Like if Penn State's going to offer you, then like everyone else in the Big Ten's going to offer you. So that's like not too uncommon. You know what I mean? I knew I was going to play football.
What position?
Offensive guard.
Okay.
Tackle in high school and then guard when I went to college in the NFL. You kind of get a feeling. I didn't know I'd go to the NFL. I think I got a beat on that like in college, like midway through college. I was like, yeah, I think I'm on the level. I'll probably go to the NFL. Cause you know, you can just tell by your competition. If you're playing at the level, you know, you're probably going
to
go.
So it's easier to get into a college for football than it is to get into the NFL at that age.
It's not like basketball. You're not like jumping to the NFL. Okay. You know how like in basketball, if you're awesome, like, or you used to be awesome in high school, you go right to the NBA. NFL is like, you're pretty much going to go to college to get that time and grow and, you know, become stronger. Cause the NFL is like just grown men. Whereas I think in your college, you're 18 to 22. By 22, you're probably on the level, maybe even by 20, but definitely not 18.
Anyone help you prepare mentally from that transition from high school to college ball?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is the cool thing. Like sports, you know, there is a lot of support, you know, and I had great trainers and I had coaches. And, you know, when you go to college, you have great strength coaches and you have the coaches there and you're definitely not alone. You know what I mean? There's a lot of support. And I was lucky. I got a lot of support, but I worked hard. You know, I worked out every day. You know, I trained every single day. I didn't care. I loved it. I really did. I love the physicality of it. I love the brutality of it, you know, to an extent. Like, you know, I'm definitely, you know, I'm going to call myself now, but I'm like a violent person. You know what I mean? Like to a degree, and you do it your whole life. Like I wouldn't now, like with regular people, absolutely not. You know what I mean? But it's like you do it so much, it's like definitely a part of you, you know? And I think that's the same with like great martial artists or boxers or fighters or anybody. And you kind of see like, oh no, I like it. I'm good at it. Like anything. I think we like what we're good at too. Cause I think at first I wasn't crazy about football when I was really young, but I stuck with it. And then you start to love it because you're good at it. You know, something comes first.
Yeah. I think about my friends that in high school were so like studious and took all the AP classes to get into a good top college and this and that. Do you ever look back and think, you know, like you grinded so much just to get into that school to play football that you missed out on activities?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I had to do it all over again, I might not have played football. You know what I mean? Like I love my experience but if I had to like do it again and be like, oh, you could go a different route. Like I might've gone a different route just because football was so, you know, it was so all income. It's just become, it's everything, you know? And it was everything for me till I was like 30, you know? I don't think I stopped till I was like 29. And then for like a whole year, you're like, oh, I still got more, you know? And it's kind of like so if I look back, like, yeah, I don't really believe in school. Like, I never really liked school or anything like that. And I don't think I was like above average intelligence where I would be like an AP student, but I definitely would have liked to explore, you know, other things, you know what I mean? Cause I think football was just such a driving factor that afterwards you're like, oh man, like there's like so much more to life, you know,
yeah.
Which is cool. So,
yeah. I wonder if like those individuals, the studious individuals ever look back now and was like, was it worth it to give up all of that, to grind that hard, you know, at that young age,
yeah,
just to get to that. And if it really played a difference, cause look at now you're not playing football.
Yeah.
That was just a short period of your life and you have so much life outside of that.
That's the crazy thing about it. And I doubt it, like, or maybe, I don't know, with the, like you say, like studious individuals, I hope they wouldn't regret it. Like, I don't have regrets, but I definitely look at my life, like what you give so much at a young age to only do that for like a young amount of time. Whereas you're like, man, I wonder if I like became like a great salesman or if I went into like, you know, oh, I like business, or, I mean, I'm in business now, but I don't know. I can definitely see both sides. And I think it is cool to invest in something that might be like a life's work, you know, for a career. But I mean, who knows if those even, how many people are career people anymore?
You know? Yeah. I mean, I guess you also don't know where it's going to go. I mean, like you look at Tom Brady, for example, that went all the way where he dedicated everything and he was able to have that.
Right.
But there's so many people that don't have that.
Rare though.
Yeah.
Super rare. I mean, most people, I mean, NFL average 3 years and you're done, you know, and that's kind of the ride. That's kind of the thing I think is cool is it's like, I was like a kid from a small town. So it took me out of that and I got to see like the world, you know what I mean? I got to like meet a lot of different kinds of people and like live in a lot of different areas and experience a lot of different things, you know, which I think like, again, back to square one, it's like, okay, that made me who I am. Cool. You know,
did you ever connect with Aaron Hernandez at all?
I have a picture next to him for our All-State team.
Are you guys the same age?
He was a year younger than me and he was like two people down, but I never connected with him. I just remember we went to go take the picture for the All-State team and he was there and I knew who he was because he was so dynamic. Even in high school, he was just such an awesome player. And I was like, okay, that's Aaron Hernandez. And then kind of just moved on. I felt bad for him. I mean, I know he's not like a perfect person, but that dude, I mean, it's proven he has CTE. So how much is that? You know what I mean? Like how much, and that's to me, what's sad about the game right now is it's like, you know, guys, like people, it's normalized to where you know about it, but not normalized to where you're like, dude, it affects your behavior like a lot. You know what I mean? So those guys, like the way they act after, you know, that's much deeper than them just being like bad people or whatever. Like they could literally be brain damaged, you know? And that's like a hard one. That's why I retired when I was 27. Cause this shit just started coming out. I was with the Denver Broncos and like I can't remember, you know, now it seems like it's like, you know, this was 10 years ago. Now it seems like, oh, everybody knows that. You know what I mean? But back then it was so normalized and minimalized that you really did think in the way it was talked about. I was like, yeah, you just got like your bell rung a little. Yeah, whatever. Move on. You'll heal. You'll be fine. When I started finding out there was like a degenerative brain disease associated with playing the game, that I had like a whole like, and I already had like a bunch of crazy shit going on in my life. My life was kind of already a shitstorm. Mm-hmm. When I found out about that on top of it, I was like, oh fuck, I'm done. And I just quit out of nowhere, man. It was like middle of the season. Like a week later, I was just like, see ya. And like, that was it. And I left. And that was the team that went to the Super Bowl. That was the Peyton team. I got traded from Seattle to Denver and they played each other in the Super Bowl that year. Oh, wow. And I was just like, man, fucking, I'm done. Like, so no matter what, I was destined to go to the Super Bowl. But I really didn't care. Like it really affected me deeply. And I had other things in my life that like, you know, you're supposed to be living the life. Like this is supposed to be great. And I wasn't happy. I wasn't, you know, and I even said that too. I really wasn't happy with my life, my situation, the people I was associated with. Which is, I think that's where I have compassion for people who are, you know, to their degree. I mean, I don't consider myself famous. I just was known in my world and in my places I walked, you know, and went. People knew who I was. You know, if you were a football fan, you might have known who I was. But I have compassion for people who have ultimate success and ultimate fame and they get all fucked up because, dude, it's a mind fuck to like have everything and then still not feel fulfilled or content, you know, and people write books for days about that, about what it takes to be content or fulfilled. And so I definitely feel for those people because I've definitely been in that experience, you know?
Yeah. And that's something I think about now. I'm like, this is where I'm at now. And I'm getting a taste of just like being known. Like I'll go to a public spot and people know me and that's cool. But I think like, okay, what if this is like 10 times as much? Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's good to be a part of the grind in the process because I'm fine with like where, like what I'm like, if I blew up tomorrow, I'd still be in the same studio.
Yeah.
Like I'd still be in the same apartment. That's, I don't think that aspect would change.
Yeah.
Cause I like this. Like this is just like a cool little place that you never would expect on top of a deli, you know?
Yeah.
That's just in this random town, you know? And it's cool and it's cozy and it's like my creative space.
Yeah.
And we go into like, Patrick and I go into like big studios and stuff like that all the time. And it's like, I don't know. Do you need that? You know, when you get to that. So it's cool to be at the bottom and then, and think about that now when you get to the top.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting to see all these like people that went to the NFL from Connecticut, like Aaron Hernandez was just a town over from you, right?
Yeah.
A
couple he towns. Was, I think he was Bristol. So he's like 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
there was someone in Danbury. I don't know if you're familiar, Austin Calitro. He was a couple of years older than me.
Yeah.
He played for, I think, the Seahawks, a couple others. He just retired.
That name sounds familiar. There's been a few, though. There's been a few guys that have gone out of Connecticut more than when I was growing up. And yeah, man, that's cool, though. That's like, that's where you want to be, like where you're coming into your own. And you don't want to change a lot of things. And then it's also, I think, the people that you have around you too, you know, keep good people around you and like bring them along and, you know, you'll kind of, it could be really good.
You know? Cause I see the people that blow up instantly and then they go get the mansion, like a lot of these celebrity influencers.
Yeah.
And what they like, people idolize that cause they post that on Instagram and whatnot. And, but is that, are they happy? And you have all of that. And it just, it seems like a lot. I don't know. Like, I'm fine with a car. I'll get a car, you know, when that day comes. But
I know. I think it's the relationships. I think that if I had to take my best shot at it again, I would say it's like keep people around you who like love you and care about you and you love them and care about them and like don't let them go. You know what I mean? That's where I think it is. And I was always pulled west. Like I was out Connecticut and then I went to Wisconsin and then I was drafted to the Seahawks. And it's like you just feel like you're just like going, you know? So maybe that's it. But yeah, it's Connecticut's definitely had some more players lately, which is good.
When did you know you were going to the NFL?
Probably my junior year. I was like all Big Ten and I was just like playing really. I had started like since I was a freshman, played a lot of football. I almost left after my junior year, but I decided to stay because I wouldn't have been like at the highest draft pick that I could have been. But yeah, right around my junior year where I was like, no, I can play this game. I know I'm good. I know you do know. It's not like a secret. It's not like for the people who it's like they don't know, then they're not on the level.
What college were you at?
University of Wisconsin.
Oh, that's kind of random, right?
You know, there's a lot of guys from Connecticut that went to University of Wisconsin. They kind of have a connection here.
Really?
And and I loved it. Like the big party school. You know, and I'm a part, I was, you know,
I was a big partier.
Yeah, man. I was like, definitely, you know, I definitely had fun too. And that's it. That's another thing I think that can get you, right? Is like too much fun too, you know, not keeping things tight and like going out and you open yourself up to a lot of things when you do that, you know? But yeah, Wisconsin, like big party school, like nice, like people were cool. It was like beautiful, like Madison, which is the capital, is where the university is. It's on like an isthmus, which is like a land mass between two lakes. I didn't know what the hell that was until I went there. And yeah, it was cool. It was awesome. Best 5 years of my life.
Is that like the Badgers or something?
Yeah, the Badgers.
Okay,
yeah,
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
So it is a well-known school kind of?
It's well-known. We were really good when I was there. They're like kind of hurting now because Michigan and Ohio State are so good. It's a Big Ten conference school. College was great. Wisconsin's great. Great people. Midwest is great. I love where I'm from. I've been lucky to live kind of, I used to train in the South, like in Florida. Played in the Midwest, played on the West Coast. I guess you could consider like Denver, like the West, and then lived on the East Coast. So I have a good taste of the country and it's all cool. The country's amazing. The country's absolutely amazing. I mean, we have so much in this country and there's so much land, you know? So that was kind of cool about the experience.
Do you think if you had gotten into trouble in college, it would have turned out differently?
I got into trouble in college too. I was kind of like, you know, like little shit. Like I got drunk once and kicked over. Like everyone wore like rode mopeds.
At the college?
Oh yeah. Everyone had mopeds. They had like moped parking and shit.
Wait, you were on a moped?
Oh yeah.
You're a little big for a moped.
No, the whole team. There'd be like 300 guys. Sometimes we could put a guy in back of us. It'd be like 600 pounds a guy on a moped.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No, I swear. And there was like a row of them and I kicked them all over. They went over like dominoes. Yeah, I got in trouble for that. I was always like falling. You know, cause I was like drinking. So I like bust my head up a bunch of times, stitches, like, but the team like hates that cause they got to like stitch you up and then you're out and stuff like that. nothing too bad, but I think I needed to like really learn like my lesson. Like my lesson was pretty like national news. Like when I got arrested in Chicago, it was like, cause I had just left football and kind of made national news for that. And then like, and that was in November. And then in March on St. Patrick's Day, I got arrested in Chicago with like a ton of drugs, you know? So that was like big, like ESPN picked up the story. Like the NFL didn't really like me at that point because I was like, I'm quitting because I don't like this shit. And also, you know, CTE, right? I was like, hey, that's pretty serious, right? Maybe we should think about this for a second. And so they definitely wanted to pick up that story to kind of like, okay, smear you a little. And people have no clue how much like leverage the NFL has in the media. Like the sports media, like they're dying to help the NFL because they don't get those contracts. They're not going to make any money, you know? So there's a lot of times where the NFL can easily say like, hey, pick this story up. It was national news like before I even got out of jail. Like I remember like getting out, phone, you know, 200 calls kind of stuff. Call my girlfriend at the time. Tried to act like nothing. Like, you know, you think you're like, you're doing the I'm a normal person thing. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, hey, got arrested, but whatever. You know what I mean? I'm going to fly back home. And she was like, what, like, what's going on? And I'm like, nothing. And we had like, we had a rocky relationship. So like at this moment, we were probably like fighting or some shit. You know what I mean? She's like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know nothing. What do you mean? She's like, what do you mean? She's like, it's on every chat. Like, yeah, it's in the news. I've seen it like 20 times. A million people called me. What happened? And then I was like, oh shit. And I was like, okay, it's probably. And then, yeah, all over the place.
And this was right after you left the Seahawks?
Yeah, after I left the Broncos. So this Broncos. Is, I left the Broncos in November and this happened in like March.
Broncos was the last team you played for?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was trying to spin it. Like I was trying to, so I used to do a lot of radio and, like I did the podcast thing, like everything. And so my solution was like, okay, I have this one career. What am I going to do next? And I was so like, go, go, go all the time that I was like, oh, I'll just do radio. I'll go into that. So I did like, I hit some like radio, like shows. I got like offered like little positions, like locally and stuff like that. Someone wanted to do a book. I think Ryan Holiday, but this was like 10 years ago. So he wasn't like on the left. Like he was still, he did Obstacles the Way, but we had met about doing a book because it was like kind of like, it was kind of looked at like momentous. Like, how could you quit the NFL? You know what I mean? Like, how could you walk? It was like they were making one of those stories about like, hey, happiness is like more than just, you know, all the stuff. And so I was already kind of like very publicized at that time. So when I got arrested, the publicity like matched it, you know? So like, yeah, I got out of jail and it was like all over the place.
And you had played for three teams, right?
No, two at that point. I played for the Seahawks and the Broncos.
Okay.
So later in my career, I went back to the NFL.
Oh, I didn't after know what the arrest?
Fuck, yeah.
All right. So let's talk about the arrest. What happens at the...
All right. So while I quit, it was like I was trying to... I had so much going on. But one of my biggest concerns, just because it's just who I am, is like I need something to do. You know what I mean? Like I'm not a guy that can be like, let me take a vacation. Let me take time off. Like I need the next thing to give, you know, give everything to, you know? So to me, that was going to be like radio and I was going to go more like the media route. You know what I mean? I was going to do like some kind of entertainment. So I was kind of like doing a lot of that, but not really knowing what I was doing. And at the same time, I felt like I had like a little bit of like people like stepped away from me because I quit. I felt like betrayed. You know what I mean? I felt like almost like abandoned, you know what I mean? Like where you're like, oh man, I thought you were my friend, but you're not. Cause it was really just about the other thing. And then especially like in my own personal relationships, you know what I mean? Like tough things with my girlfriend, like things like all that stuff. I felt really alone and definitely started using way more. You know what I mean? Like I used to just smoke pot and drink a little when I was in the NFL, but then I started like kind of amping it up and like drinking more, smoking more, going out, like, and doing everything at the same time. I think looking back, I was just scared. You know what I mean? I didn't know who I was going to be next, but I wanted to be somebody. I didn't want to not be something or somebody or have something to do, you know? So at this time around like the new year, my girlfriend just like kicked me out of my house. You know what I mean? Like, which is crazy. But you have to go. What are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of like if a fight gets to a certain point, like they're going to win. You can't like, you know what I mean? You have to for like everyone, for everything to be better. So I'm like, okay. So I left and then I just hit like a circuit and I was probably in like 5-6 cities and like every weekend I was in like a different city. You know, I went to like Miami, I went to LA, I went to New York, I went to Chicago. The last one was I went to Chicago for St. Patrick's Day because that was like a big thing in Wisconsin. Like a lot of people would go to St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. So I, all my old buddies were there from college and I was like, oh, I want to see him. But I brought like a ton of cocaine and ecstasy and freaking LSD and marijuana and I was drinking. So I was like on all of this stuff, you know, and just going nuts. And I was like, when you're that big and you kind of like know how to do drugs, you can do it. You know what I mean? Without like killing yourself. But I mean, like I was going like the whole day. So at the end of the night, even my friends were all like, they were, I'll never forget. We were at this bar called Will's Northwoods Inn. And like, that's where everybody went. And like all, like five of my closest friends from college were like in a circle and like, you have to go get like help. And I'm like, I think you're right, but that's not happening tonight. Like I'm not doing that tonight. So let's just have fun.
Might as well go out with a bang.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were like, and they were kind of just like, all right, whatever. And I remember I saw another old buddy and I went to this club called the Underground. Sketchy place, like in a sketchy part of Chicago. But there was like, I think like some guys from the Clippers were there and then some guys from the Dolphins were there. And I knew a couple of the guys from the Dolphins. And from my recollection, okay, I had like a sunglass case full of everything, right? And I was just like, oh, hey, do you want something? You want whatever? But a bouncer saw it. And I think he thought that I was trying to like deal or whatever, you know? And he like comes and I was like standing on a couch dancing. He's like, get down from there, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, whatever, no. And he like kind of like grabs me by the arm and starts like walking me somewhere. And I like pull off to like, I'm like, I'm going to just get out of here. And I go down this, like I open this door and it was like going into the Matrix because the corridor was like bright white, like lights like these and like white. Like I felt like that scene, like where you open the door and now you're in like a bright lit area. Like this was an underground club, all dark. Neon lights, music to this. And this guy's like right in front of me. And he's like a big dude. He's like 6'3" or something, like, you know, and he's got like two of his other guys in there. And this is kind of where I'm like starting to haze out. And he's like yelling at me, like he's all like mad or something. And next thing you know, I come to on the other side of the hallway and I'm talking to the manager and I'm like spitting out blood. You know, my lip is like all busted up. And I remember saying to the manager, I'm like, okay, look, we're even. Cause you know, he got me like, I'm going to go now, you know? And they're like, no, you're not going anywhere. Like they called the cops. Then like felt like almost right after I said that the cops like busting the door and they had their like tasers, like, you know what I mean? Like tasers on me and shit. And I got this like weird fear of being tasered. Like, I don't want to be tasered. Like it's crazy. And it's been a threat like a couple times for me and I just go right with it. I don't know why. I just don't want to ever be tasered. It's like a thing I got. I feel like even guns have less power over me, but still. And I was like, I'm like, you know, whatever, you got me. And they arrest me. And then next thing you know, I'm like in the paddy wagon, you know, cause I'm like a big guy. They don't put me in a regular. I feel like two out of maybe the four or five times I've been arrested, I'm always in a paddy wagon. They always put me in the van. Cause like, I can't fit, you know what I mean?
Do they have to use like the two pairs of handcuffs?
They use the two pairs of handcuffs, which I appreciate because it's like, they could squeeze me into one, but it'd be like really painful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, next thing you know, you're like going to jail. And, you know, at this point, I'm still like tripping out on acid. Okay. So I'm in jail and it's like 2-3 in the morning and I'm in like a holding cell with another guy. And he's like saying, I mean, he's all like, he's, you know, he's all like upset. And I'm just like, it is what it is, man. Like they got us. Like I kept kind of like doing that. Like they got us, like it is. And then that whole time was just wacko, man. Cause it was like Chicago County Jail. Like it was like some guys killed people in here. Some guys are, you know, like there's felonies everywhere, like everything. And I remember like one kid that I was talking to, like as I was in line to get arraigned and he's like, oh yeah, you got X's on you. That's a felony. And I was like, oh fuck, that's really bad, huh? Like I had no clue really what I was heading towards. But no one really bothered me. You know what I mean? I mean, I fell asleep. I took my shirt off to like put it around my head and I fell asleep on the floor face down for like 4 hours, 5 hours. Cause I was in there so long, you know? And then eventually they took us to get arraigned, you know, and you're in line. And I do remember at one point, one of the guards was like, everything got like really silent because they were going in, you know, the door to the courtroom's right there and you're just waiting in line with, you know, you're in there. And the guard was like, he's like, you hear that? He's like, that guy killed somebody. Like, got super silent. Like, it got serious in the court. I was like, okay. I came in. Oh, and then I was talking all kinds of crazy shit to these dudes, though. Because I'm tripping. So I'm talking about, like, and this was when I was, like, really, like, new agey. So I'm talking about, like, you know, collective consciousness and enlightenment, just garbage. You know what I mean? Like, and they're probably like, this dude's whacked out, whatever. I go in to get arraigned. I stand before the judge. It was like the judge already knew. He's like, were you that football player for the Broncos? And I was like, Jesus, like, how do you, that's the weird thing about football. It carries a, people love football. They really do. They just love it. And it always carried some kind of weight. Whereas like I wasn't famous, but football's famous. So then I was like known because of the football thing. And he knew exactly who I was and knew I got arrested like before he even arraigned me. And then he kind of arraigned me right there. And then that was it. And then you waited forever, like a little longer, ate some garbage food. And then they just like let me out. I had to go get my phone like over at the other, you know, some other facility, some crazy shit. And then that was that. And then that was when I like lawyered up. Always got to find a lawyer, obviously from that state, you know, because they can't practice anywhere else. And I did. And then he kind of like took care of it. That's what got me into, I went to rehab. I went to Malibu Passages. We're like,
oh, Lindsay, you went to Malibu Passages?
Fucking Passages, dude. That's what got me in there.
How much was that? Or does
60,000
for yeah. How, a month or?
Yeah.
60, that insurance yeah. covers that or no?
The NFL covered it.
What?
Yeah.
Even though you were retired?
Yeah.
Why did the NFL cover it?
I don't know. It was like some kind of thing like where it was for like my health. Holy and I cow. And I was vested. So like I did have like health benefits and certain perks and stuff. And
for life or how does that work?
7 years and then you get like other things for life. Like, but I was vested with like strong medical for like 7 years. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and then like you get like a like there's other. It's not bad. It's really not terrible.
For
like
Malibu Passage.
Dude, it was great.
It was like a resort.
I wish I can't. You can't. You know, I'm not gonna say who I was in there with, but yeah. I was in there with like other people that were like you well would know, known, yeah. And they were pretty cool. And it was nice, man. It was like Lionel Richie's like old house, like in Malibu. It's like on the Cascading Mountains. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Did you know you had a problem?
No. Yes and no.
Or
it's
do you
weird.
Think you had a problem now?
Oh yeah, no, I definitely had a problem and I'm definitely like, I hate saying I'm an addict, even though I am. I just don't like to think of myself like that. I don't think it's healthy, mm-hmm. but I have an addictive personality and I have an addictive problem. Do you know what I mean? Like when I do it or when I indulge it, it will become a problem. Do you know what I mean? So, but I don't believe it's like even from like football, like, right. You wouldn't say to yourself like, oh, I'm not a good football player. You know what I mean? So I don't want to say to myself like, oh, you're an addict. Because I don't know if that helps with recovery as opposed to saying like when you use, you're an addict, but when you're done, you're clean and you're not. I kind of like that more. It's called it's some kind of recovery thing. My dad actually taught me it because my dad gave up drinking when I was like 6 years old and never drank again. And that's the approach he took. It's called positive approach or something like that. Where basically the idea is as soon as the drugs are out of your system, you're not an addict. But if you're using, you're an addict. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the way they look at it. And kind of really about being positive, but also putting it behind yourself. It's an interesting dynamic because I do believe like in terms of like AA, like you have to be honest with yourself and you have to come to that conclusion. You know what I mean? But back then it was so meshed in with like a lifestyle, like a work hard, play hard kind of thing that it was very easy to like brush off. Where you're like, no, I work very hard. I play very hard. Yeah. You know, I live an intense lifestyle and I party and like with the same kind of passion or intensity or whatever, blowing off steam. And that is why I agree though with the AA thing, because you do have to like look at it and be honest about it. You have to have that moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
do you think going to such a fancy rehab made a difference, or could you have gone? Because you know the average person can't afford that.
Yeah.
So would you encourage someone that can't afford that to go to a regular one, or what? What do you?
I did it not out of like I didn't do it out of like any place of real honesty. I did say I was done drinking and done with all that stuff, right? And I have gone back and forth and stuff like that. And like, there's times where I feel like you know I'm good about it, and there's times where I feel like I'm not good. You know what I mean? I try now not to drink. marijuana is tough for me just because I smoked marijuana like my entire life. You know what I mean? Since I was like 16. And with football, it's great with the pain and everything like that. And to a degree, I feel like sometimes I'm better with it. You know what I mean? But that's not really what's dangerous. I think for me, drinking can be dangerous. And I try not to drink like in public or around people. You know what I mean? If I'm going to drink, like I find like I'll drink with a friend and I try to keep it really low key. And that's where I go. Passages was just about me proving to the judge that I was sorry for what I did. It wasn't about me being like, oh, I'm going to change. You know what I mean? It was more like my lawyer was like, you should go to rehab. It looks good because I'm going to go tell the judge that that's what you're doing. So then in going to rehab, I went to Passages because it was nice. And I didn't want to go to like, have you ever heard of like Schicksal?
No.
Bro, Schicksal is like the craziest shit ever. Or Schadel Schick.
Where is that?
Dude, these guys, I think it was an old place in Connecticut. They claim that they could cure you from anything, like alcoholism, like no one else could. And what they do is you go in and they give you a shot of your favorite alcohol. But with that, there's something that they give you that makes you violently ill. And they soak your sheets in that alcohol that you like. So you're going to bed in that soaked alcohol while you're violently ill. And the association is so strong that they claim you'll never drink again. So
it wasn't that. Do you think it works?
Yeah, I do. I don't want to do it.
So that's like shock therapy kind of in a way.
Schadel Schick, something like that, I think is what it's called.
Is it still active?
It might be. I don't know. It's worth checking out. But I'm pretty sure that's the name. And I'll never forget hearing about that. But no, I just did Passages because I was like, okay, I got to go away. I want to go somewhere nice. And I think that's what it is for most people. I do think if you want to really, you could maybe get help there, but I mean, it was very cushy. And there was like I didn't want to go to like group meetings and I didn't go.
They're getting paid all this money.
I just didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to like deal with it. I went to individual therapists and I was okay with that. And then I was like, nah, I don't care. You know, and then I did. I took a long break and then I kind of went back. And then, you know, it's always been a difficulty for me. It's probably still a difficulty, but I feel like I have it like pretty much under control. But being a completely clean and sober person, I don't know, man. You know what I mean? And then you think about like for me, a motherfucker is just like, how's my brain doing? You know what I mean? And I think about, oh, is pot good for me? Because maybe it helps with if you have potential brain damage, you know? So it's not something like, it's something I try to be very honest with myself about, but at the same time, I'm not a perfect person. That's probably the best thing.
No one is,
No, and that's probably the best thing I've done. And I admire people. Like my dad is like an unbelievable role model to me for the way that he just like, bam, done. You know what I mean? Like, done. I'm never going to do it again. I think that's impressive.
I think it's also weighing like the pros and cons, like as you get older too, like, okay, maybe it's not the best idea to go to the bar and drink and where trouble could happen or anything could happen, but you stay at home at your apartment and you have a fun time and you get the same feeling. You're saving money too. You have the same effect and you're not hurting anyone. And you know, there's different.
It's kind of a steam. It's for me, it's always a blow off steam thing. You know, and I agree. I think that's, you know, and that's how I tried to do it. And I still try to be like, oh, I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm not going to do it. But every now and then I'm like, I'm going to have a couple of beers. Like I want to, you know, and it's a blow off steam thing. Cause I really can't stop being like who I am. You know what I mean? I can't stop being a person that's like, I'm still like incredibly driven. I still want like everything. I want to do everything. You know what I mean? I want to like live that, like, I want to live the life. I like it, you know? And maybe that's from football. You become an adrenaline junkie.
And when you start to lose that, that's when you need to check yourself.
Absolutely.
I think that's what, you know, people lose it when they go down into bad habits.
Yeah.
So I think that's it's something to look out for.
I feel like having a thing has always kept me like going, driven in line. You know what I mean? But definitely like an adrenaline junkie, definitely all that stuff, you know, used to gamble all the time. Love gambling. Yeah. I stopped that.
That's good.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I could relate.
Are you a gambler?
I was, that I don't anymore.
What'd you do?
Electronic baccarat at the casino at Yonkers.
I swear to God, I looked at you and in my mind, I heard baccarat.
Yeah. That was what I got so lucky. I would turn 500 into 30 grand.
I've seen guys, I've seen Chinese kids at the casino. Mm-hmm. In freaking
Mohegan,
Foxwoods,
Mohegan,
with 50,000, 70,000 in front of them playing baccarat, And it's crazy, dude.
It's insane. And a lot of it's luck. I mean, you can look at the patterns all day long, but my trick, my skill was just riding the patterns. And whether that's luck or whatever, like that was just what I would do. If it was going all blue, I'd keep going while everyone's betting red.
Yeah.
And then you lose one and that's when you leave.
Right.
But
that's an all or nothing game too.
You have to be all in. That's what always differs you from everyone else. You got to be willing to keep doubling down.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the balls to do that, it's not going to work for you.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's how I played it.
That's freaking great.
It was fun. But I mean, I have, like you were saying, I have an addictive personality too, which is why I don't do drugs. I mean, I do weed.
Yeah.
I love edibles. Yeah. They help me sleep, rock the Tyson 2.0.
Right. Weed's weird, man. I can't make up my mind on it. I know I'm better when I'm not smoking weed, like in business and with people, but sometimes I get so fucking annoyed and frustrated that I again, like blow off a little steam. And I do like it for that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I used to be so against it because I figured it's a drug, you know, and I'm very anti-drug.
Right.
But I can't, I can never do an interview high. I couldn't function. I couldn't do an edible. I'd be falling asleep on you.
No, absolutely. Not.
But at night, you know, if I'm at home, I'll pop an edible. It's, you know, it's and it helps you sleep.
Right.
I've been doing this thing too, where you set it, like you turn off the heat or you do like 65 degrees.
Okay.
That helps too, where like you keep it cold.
Like your place?
Yeah, your apartment. You keep it cold. That's what they said.
When you do an edible?
No, when you sleep, just in general. Oh, in general. No.
Okay.
Just when you sleep, like they say that helps.
Really?
The colder it is, the easier you sleep.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Apparently, I was reading it.
Are you finding it works?
Yeah, it helps. And even like this place, I turned off the heat because it would get hot in this room.
Yeah.
And I feel like my mind flows better. Because with the heat, it kind of makes you tired and like when you're not talking, it can like it lulls you down. But like I'm more upbeat when it's
a little lethargic when it's warm. Yeah, I could see that.
Something like that.
Yeah,
it could just be a theory. You never know. You know,
if it works, man, believing in it is half the battle.
Yeah, I quit energy drinks. I'm done with the Celsius's. I used to do one a day. Now I just do coffee.
Celsius is tasty though.
So good.
The I new like flavors. Celsius.
Yeah. I do too. I was doing one a day. I'm almost 2 weeks clean from Celsius.
Good
now.
On you, because they're hiding stuff in there.
That's what I think, right? Yeah. And I'd always feel like kind of like hungover, like a crash midday, whereas coffee, you know, you could drink a couple cups, it'll be okay.
Yeah, black coffee, you're good all day, especially good black coffee. But like, no, the Celsius stuff, like, yeah, man, not good. Because they hide it with the natural flavors. And I thought I saw, if you look at the can, it says sucralose is in there, which they don't have to count as sugar, but it's sugar.
It is sugar.
Yeah. Okay. But that stuff, because it's too good.
Yeah, so I'm backed off of those.
At least you weren't on like Monster or any of that shit.
No, I was never a Monster kid. Those things, I used to be a Red Bull kid though.
Yeah.
Those things were the worst. Even the sugar-free ones are pretty bad for you.
Monster scares me because like the Christians around this, you know, I'm a Christian, but like the organization of like Christians, like when they all get together, like with the church stuff, like, and like, they're like convinced that Monster is like demon stuff. You know what I mean? Like they're like demons are making this and it's putting a spell on you and stuff like that. And you're like, okay. And sometimes I listen to them because sometimes the Christians are right. So it's like, I'm like, hey man, when I think of Monster, I'm always like, that's some weirdo stuff, you know?
So that feeling that you used to get from drugs and alcohol, what have you turned and channeled that feeling into? Because everyone, you know, sometimes we substitute the feeling when we get clean or go to a different stage in life. Everyone kind of channels it into something new.
Yeah. Honestly, the excitement of my business, you know, and so I have a coffee shop and we do like smoothies and we do like really good coffee and juice and like pretty healthy geared food. Which I don't eat. And
well, promote the name of it. We got a lot of Connecticut listeners.
Moonshots is what it's called. Okay. And I like apply my perfection to it and I apply like my drive to it and I want to be bigger than what we even are now. And I see the potential and like, it really excites me. You know, I'd say that's where I channeled everything. And I think when I think back, you know, always on the edge with stuff, always a little bit like close. But when I lost football, I really went overboard with addiction and things like that, you know? So my medicine really is like my work and focusing on that. And then where I can have a little fun or try to relax. And I'm still, honestly, I still look for stuff that, hey, is this a healthy outlet? Or can I find a healthy habit? You know what I mean? Like, is shooting a good thing? You know what I mean? Or like, I don't want to do this, but I always like people who fly fish. You know, I'm like, man, that seems like a cool thing to do, you know, as opposed to like, oh, I work and then to blow off steam, I'll smoke a little pot or I'll do this, you know? So it's definitely like a kind of like a, you know, it's in progress.
So we see it a lot in the news where like someone will get arrested that's active in the NFL. And, you know, sometimes like the NFL won't even make a statement about it, or they kind of let things play out in court, you know, which is even better than the court system itself. You know, they're actually innocent until proven guilty. In some cases, others you see people get totally blacklisted depending on what the situation was. What was your experience having gone through arrest publicly and then you went back to the NFL?
Yeah, they, you know, they're kind of like all about business, 100%. So whatever a business would do is usually what the NFL is going to do, you know? And I think they masquerade as like, oh, the old boys club, or, hey, it's just boys having fun, or it's football. But it's really, I think they get a good beat on public perception and they kind of go that route. You know what I mean? Like they're going to like, so if the public's outraged about like, you know, whatever this player did, they're going to come down and do some stuff to him. You know, if the public is like, whatever, they're going to be like, whatever, because at the end of the day, that guy's a part of their show and he's an entertainer. The more I look at the NFL, and they always tell you that, like when I play, they're like, it's a business. This is business. This is business. The more you look at it as a business, the more you really will understand it. You know, so for me, I just went back. I was shocked that they even took me back because of all the shit I said about the NFL. It was crazy. It was like almost one of those like little, I do these like weirdo reality experiments where you're like, hey, can I turn reality on itself and will it actually work? And, you know, I think that's part of my like a little curiosity and boredom and like an adrenaline kind of like, you know, junkie thing where I'm like, hey, maybe I'll just go back. I'm not doing anything anyways. If I have brain damage, it's already done. And I want some more money, so whatever. You know what I mean? I'm going to go do that, right? And I trained with, do you know who Jay Glazer is? I trained with Jay Glazer. Jay Glazer's like a Fox analyst, but he's also a trainer. And he's really good friends with Roger Goodell, the you know commissioner of the league. And so I went back and trained with Jay Glazer. And Jay Glazer has a lot of influence and was kind of like, hey, no, he's clean. He's working really hard. He wants to play football again. Played it his whole life. You know, wants to play a little more. Went through a bad time. And it was fine. And I signed with the Eagles. And the only problem was it was just I had been out of the game for too long. Like I was just not in the shape I was. And I was older. And I even noticed like when I was playing with the Eagles, I was like, damn, like I'm like slow. I'm not strong. Not to where I was like awful, awful. But I mean, I was like not playing on the level at all. And then so then they cut me like with the last cuts. And then I was done.
You know? Is there like a new like audition practice process when you're already in the NFL leave and then want to go back? Or is it just like, here you go, you're in?
Yeah, I mean, I was training with Glazer for a couple months. My agent kind of put out feelers and I had a couple teams interested and I just they offered me the Eagles offered and I signed with them. And that was kind of they knew I could play. They had film on me. It wasn't like I think I might have went and done a workout with the Eagles, but I don't even excuse me. That Coke, man, it gets you. Sorry.
You're good.
I don't even think I did that. I think it was just like.
So you didn't even make it to the season. Yeah, it was.
No. I got cut in the preseason. I was not playing on level. I was not there. No. So, which I don't even blame them. I kind of knew. Like when I left, they were like, because they do the thing where it's like the last cut. So they're like, okay, you guys got the weekend off and we'll call you. And, you know, Monday regular practice starts, right? So I just flew back to Seattle. I just went home, you know? And they like called me and they were like, we've been trying to get a hold of you. Where are you? And I was like, I went back to Seattle and they're like, we told you to be around your phone. And I'm like, okay, well, did I make the team? They're like, no. I'm like, so who the fuck cares? Like, all right, bye. And that was it, you know? So.
Well, at least you can't look back and say you didn't try. Like, I feel like that's good closure to say you got back into it.
You know, I think it was just, again, it was just a thing where you just don't know what to do with yourself at that age, having played football for so long. And I was like, well, maybe I should just go back. And I just kind of minimalized the risk and everything like that. And I was just like, you know what? I just want to play. Cause part of you still love, like it's weird. Football for me is a love hate. It's a love hate relationship. I love the game. I played the game. I gave everything to the game. And then I hated it. Cause I'm like, oh shit, this could kill me. You know what I mean? So that's like that. Or you also feel like you were lied to. You also feel like you guys were dishonest. You've known about this for a long time. Could have made people aware of it. You did not, you know, you did the business thing. And so there's kind of that weird, you know, animosity a little bit.
How are you feeling when you got that phone call?
Nothing really. Didn't care. Because honestly, I knew. I've always known like when I was on the level or not on level. And I knew I was like, dude, there's no way. It was me and Tim Tebow. And I'm like, me and Tim Tebow.
You versus Tim
no,
Tebow?
No, not versus. Oh, and he okay. was on the team too. But he, okay. and in my mind, I go, me and Tim Tebow are definitely getting cut from this team. I know it for a fact because he's playing like garbage and I'm playing like garbage. And I think I was his center for a little while too. And it was just not good, you know? So it's like not a surprise. I expected it.
And he was cut too?
He was cut.
Was that the end of his career right there?
Yeah. And well, remember, did he go back to Jacksonville for like a minute trying to play tight end with,
he switched Myers? Positions, right?
Yeah. So that was like the end of his quarterback career. And then I think a few years later, he tried to go back with Urban Meyer to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So
and now he plays baseball or something, or he switched sports.
I don't know.
Didn't he have like one big blowout year, which is how he got like super famous
with the Broncos?
That was with the Broncos.
Yeah. Okay. I was there the year after and they like hated Tim Tebow over there because he just is such a different style player and does things different. And you know, he's Tim Tebow. It's like a whole thing with him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he had like a really good run with the Broncos.
What's your opinion on the whole Taylor Swift thing?
Oh my God. I mean, you have so many listeners, man. I feel like I would get killed if I told you my real opinion about the Taylor Swift thing. Like, I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know, man. That's weird to me. I think it's like the NFL is getting deeper and deeper into like what they do in Hollywood. There was a writer's strike. You know what I mean? Like, also, if you really think about what the NFL provides, is it's like when you do a show or a movie or a concert as a Hollywood person, you're only seen like once a year. You know what I mean? NFL, you're on TV every week. And she's up in the box on TV like every week. I feel like it was like they arranged a dating thing between these two people. Because I kind of feel like Travis Kelce is definitely like, if there was a contract to sign and there was some blood to put on the contract and to sign it and to like, you know, and someone else was there, I think he would do that. I don't know. So it's like, yeah. You know, that whole world, you know, like you probably interview these people, like there's a world, like they do things, they agree to things and then they go by another, they march to a different drum. So I feel like Travis Kelce did that. And I feel like Taylor Swift was like this great match to where both got more famous. The NFL got more famous. The NFL grew its fan base. And, you know, Taylor Swift is, you know, oh, just won the Grammy for best album. Oh, just won the Super Bowl. Oh, it's like it's planned too perfectly.
Well, there was no way to predict he was going to win the Super Bowl, but everything else. Yeah.
Not really, because I thought they just had a guy come out. I thought like, you know, people think, okay, gambling in the NFL, right? The NFL makes $25 billion a year. Right? $25 billion, right? Gambling on the NFL is $80 billion a year, okay? If gambling on the WWE was $80 billion a year and the WWE made $25 billion a year, what would you, like, say about the WWE? What do you already say about the WWE? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, people is fucking fixed. Like...
Yeah, I mean, I compare that relationship to the Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian situation. Because like that was at a time where they needed some different press, Kim Kardashian and them. And then all of a sudden that comes around and Kris Jenner's like the ultimate fixer. if there's clean any conspiracy. Yeah, that, yeah. I mean, I don't know. They do look happy now though, like Taylor Swift. And maybe like it was staged and then it fell into something.
Yeah.
You know, like,
do you want it to work? Are you like really trying to
for
like,
that. I'm happy for
you're
them.
You're rooting for them?
Yeah. I mean, like I like some of her music, you yeah. know, and I admire his skill and what he's unable to do and that whole team and whatnot. But I just think like some of it is just like blown so much out of proportion. And then the hate's crazy. Like how people hate her for this and this and that. It's just like, it's nuts.
I don't like her. I think there's something off and I don't really like him. I think there's something off and I feel like the NFL is going into this weird realm where it's like, guys, it's like, I get that it's football and it's your arena and you make your own rules. Great. But now they're starting to like do like Hollywood stuff. You know what I mean? That I always find bizarre. You know what I mean? Like, you know, in entertainment, I guess it makes sense. It's just weird from my perspective. It's weird to see, you know, I expect Hollywood to do Hollywood things. You know what I mean? I expect them to arrange relationships, to stage things. I expect them to do all of that crazy stuff they do, you know, I guess you seeing the NFL do it is kind of like weird for me. You know what I mean? It was like if you grew up and you realized Barney wasn't really that dinosaur. He was like a fucking demon. You know what I mean? And he had the fangs and stuff. And you like look again, you're like, oh, shit. That's kind of like what I feel like with the NFL.
The world's changing, you know? Everything's changing.
Yeah, no, it totally is. It totally is. Maybe that's part of when you're like, you know, you remember like the old world. You know, like how the world was.
Yeah.
Yeah, how the old world was, for sure.
When you got out of the NFL, you jumped right into the smoothie shop?
No, that took like 5 years. I was like digging ditches for like a pool company for a while. That
you were
was
working
crazy.
For a pool company?
Yeah, I didn't know what to do, man. I was like making $700 a week, smoking a pack of cigarettes a day, digging ditches, got into great shape. And my boss was fantastic, Poolscape in Guilford, Mike Martosi, awesome guy. But yeah, I didn't know what to do. So I was like doing that. I did like sales stuff. I did like all kinds of stuff. And then I finally kind of fell into the juice thing because like it was healthy. I saw it out on the West Coast. My mom actually runs the kitchen side of things. And she was always like an amazing cook and like did juices and smoothies and came up with like all the recipes and stuff like that. So it was like, really great because it was like kind of like I always felt like I know that they don't look at it like this, but I always look at it like my like family kind of saved me a little. You know what I mean? Like we all do it together. You know, my mom, sister, dad are a part of it. And that's something that I just feel like is like pretty that's probably why I love it too, because like my heart is in it too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I really love it. I love the brand and it's like our family brand. So it means a lot to me, you know?
If you could go back to your high school self, would you change anything or would you give that version of you advice for what was to come in the future?
I don't know, man. You don't want to change anything. It's weird. I think about that a lot. I think we all think about that. You know, if I could go back in time, you know, and I don't think I would. I really don't. I want for the first time, like in the last year or two, for the first time in my life, I'm like excited for like the new future. You know what I mean? Like I want to see what this reality and this timeline holds. You know what I mean? Like I want to go forward here. For a long time, I wanted to go back in my life and like change things. You know what I mean? Like Back to the Future shit. I was like, I just told myself that. But I don't think I would. I don't even think I would bother myself. You know what I mean? Because I don't want myself to see me, you know? I think I would just leave it, you know?
Yeah. John, thank you so much for coming on the show today, man. That's been a pleasure chatting with you. Really great conversation.
I appreciate it too. Yeah, it's been a long time for me, so thank you. You're awesome, man.
Warmed really cool. you up. Thank really you, bro. Cool.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, and thank you to Patrick again for connecting us, and I got to come check out the smoothie shop.
Absolutely. We'll get you addicted.
Yeah, it definitely sounds good.
Cool.